Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Welcome.
I'm Megs.
I'm Hannah.
And today we have a much shorter episode than normal for you. But I watched a Forensic Files episode, and it was season 6, episode 16, called Skin of Her Teeth.
Ew.
Yes, and this
I don't like it.
The case of Tina Mott. So this story takes place at 622 Minor Avenue.
Why are there so many sixes?
There wasn't. There was one.
No, there was not.
622.
Yeah, what fucking episode was it?
Oh, on Forensic Files.
Yeah.
Season 6, episode 16.
And then you literally hit the address and I'm like, stop.
Okay, you scared me. I'm still scared. But
yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Well.
Because you hit the first two and I was like, oh God, please don't let there be a third. And then you literally started the story and there was a third right away.
Okay, but if it would have been like episode with three sixes in a row, which I'm scared to say right now because you're making me nervous, I think I would have just been like, I watched Forensic Files. That's it.
Never
mind. Figure it out yourself. Okay. On August 7th of 1996, Tim Lyons and TJ Dijon were heading out to the lake to go fishing. The boys did not catch any fish that day, but they caught something else.
Oh, no.
Any guesses?
It's got to be a body part. Is it teeth?
They reeled in a skull.
Stop.
They were stunned.
I would shit. Oh my God, yeah. I would shit.
They were like, what the hell? But see, at first, the boys didn't think it was a real skull.
No, of course not.
No, because you can't let your brain go there, and they're children. So they thought it was a Halloween decoration. And they set it on the bank of the river. Tim said that he told his parents about it that night, and they didn't believe him. They thought he was making it all up. Some of the articles said that the boys and their parents went back to the river the next day, but according to Forensic Files, the boys said they went back and there was no mention of their parents being with them. The skull was still sitting there where they had left it, so they decided to call the police. They said the first officer that arrived threw a rock at the skull.
What?
Like, that's what they said in the episode, and I'm like, can you say that again? They did what now? Apparently, the officer threw a rock at the skull and was like, yeah, it's real. You boys just opened up a big investigation. And they said the officer made them feel like they had done something wrong. Like, oh, great. An investigation's open now. Now we have to do some work.
Wow. And I was just about to say, like, if you ever find something like that, like, just call because I'd rather, and everybody else would rather.
Yes.
Come out on a call that turns out to not be a real skull versus it actually being a real skull and you just tossing it away without realizing.
Well, just ignore these asshats, honestly. Like, just call it in.
Right.
Okay. Investigators arrived at the scene at Linden River and they sent out boats and scuba divers. There were scratches all over the skull and it did not have any teeth. The scuba divers were not able to locate any other body parts or any of the missing teeth. The local coroner examined the skull and determined it had only been in the lake for a few weeks. There was soft tissue on the skull, and the coroner could tell that the flesh had been forcibly scraped off, which explained all those scratches on the skull.
Okay.
Yeah, this one is very, very brutal. The skull was sent off to Beth Marie. She was one of only 63 board-certified forensic anthropologists in the United States. She said that the skull was one of the most challenging and frustrating cases that she had ever worked on. When viewing the skull, here are a few of the things that she noticed right away. There was a deep indentation on the top of the skull, so it looked like a machete had been used. Cuts were all over the skull, and that told her someone had sat with the skull in their hands and stripped the flesh off. Jagged marks on the skull appeared to be from a serrated knife. Cut marks on the cheekbones showed the jaw was forcefully removed with a small single-edged blade, such as a pocket knife.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Puncture wounds in the eye sockets showed the killer removed the eyes.
Okay, well.
And there was a broken tooth root in the upper jaw, which meant the teeth had all been pulled out.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Mm-hmm. As Beth looked at the skull, she noticed that when she held it at like a certain angle and the light was shining on it, she could see the marks in the bone where needle nose pliers had been used to snap the teeth out.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So if you're not familiar with what kind of tool that is, it's used for things such as like gripping, bending, or reaching into small spaces to get things. The tool has a pointed tip, and each side of the pliers has indents that taper down. So the indented pattern of the tool could be seen in the bone where the pliers had been used to snap the teeth out. Beth had never seen anything like this in her life, and she didn't even think the police would believe her about her findings, because she was like, this is so fucking atrocious, they're just not going to think this is real. Since it was so gruesome, she started second-guessing herself, even. So she consulted two other experts, and when they came back with the same exact findings, she gave the information to the police. Now they had to figure out who the skull even belonged to, and they didn't have a lot to go on. Based on the measurements inputted into a computer, the skull belonged to a Caucasian woman who was under 35 years old. So there's not a lot to go on there. The investigators began combing through the missing persons cases, and they discovered that four individuals had been reported missing. One of them was 21-year-old Tina Mott, and she had been reported missing 2 months prior to the skull being found. Tina was a single mother of an 18-month-old boy. She had been living in an apartment with her 24-year-old boyfriend, Tim Bradford. Tina was from New York and Tim was from Ohio. But the two of them met when she was selling magazines door to door. After they moved in together, Tim was working as a framer at an art shop, and then Tina was a clerk at a local store. So the police naturally were looking at Tim, and they were like, okay, we're going to need to know what's going on here. So they bring him in, and he said that Tina had gone back to New York to visit her family, and then she left her child behind. Her family was contacted, and they said she was not in New York. You may think that Tim was the one that reported his girlfriend missing, but you would be wrong in that case. His mother, Elizabeth Bradford, was the one that reported it. His mother thought it was strange that Tina would go to New York without her son. It just didn't add up. So she called Tina's family in New York. When they said she wasn't there, she knew something was terribly wrong.
Okay.
Elizabeth called the police and said she was afraid of her son and his temper, but she had to report Tina missing. So kudos to this woman.
She said she was afraid of...
her son.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so she's afraid of Tim Bradford. She called. Even though she was afraid, she did the right thing. And I'm sure that can't be easy.
No, God, call, no, it's her kid.
Yeah, on her own son. Like, regardless of her feelings towards him, there's got to be some sort of weird thing that you go through, you know, when you come to that conclusion, like, I have to call. It sucks. Investigators were trying to determine if the skull actually belonged to Tina Mott, but it was really difficult to know for sure. Typically, they can use teeth to identify a victim, but the skull didn't have teeth. The lower jaw was missing, and the upper teeth had all been forcefully removed.
I feel like the whole skull has just been fucked up.
It has. Exactly. They used skull photograph superimposition. An anthropologist takes an image of the skull and superimposes it on an image of the person that it could belong to. And this is used to see if there's any matching characteristics.
Okay, that's actually really intriguing.
Yes.
Like, very much so.
Yeah.
I would be very intrigued to see that.
Yeah, and so other techniques they use, they attempt to put a face on the skull using facial reconstruction and forensic sculpture.
That's cool as shit.
So forensic anthropologists have only had a 70% success rate with these techniques because certain features like eyelids, ears, mouth, and lips are not indicated by the shape of the skull. So these techniques are usually used as like a last resort, but it can be very helpful when you don't have anything else to go on.
It's still really cool.
It is. The killer had removed all visible teeth. However, there were two wisdom teeth that had not dropped.
Oh!
They were hiding up there.
That happened to me!
Yeah.
I had them up until, God, what? I think I was like 28 when they finally started coming down, and I went to the dentist and I was like, yeah, I'm getting my wisdom teeth, and they were like, oh, how old are you? And I was like 28, and they all looked at me like I was crazy. They're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Everybody else got them when they were, you know, freaking teenagers, and for some, like, they actually originally told me I wasn't even gonna get any.
That's right. Yeah, they yours said were, that, like, hiding.
Yeah, they said that they weren't even there. Mm-hmm. And then somehow, yeah, when I got to that age, they, like, were, it was my upper ones.
Yeah.
And they claim that I don't have bottom ones, but.
Could be a surprise later.
Right.
Well, so Tina's 21 when, and hers are still hidden in there.
Okay.
So maybe it was the same thing. They were embedded in the gums. Inside teeth, there's something called tooth pulp, which contains DNA. The doctor extracted tooth pulp from the teeth and sent it to the lab for testing along with DNA from Tina's child.
I don't think I like that.
Tooth pulp?
Yeah.
It does sound
I don't like
a little
it.
Cringy.
It does.
Unfortunately, they were not able to make a match with the tooth pulp, and it's possible that it's because the teeth were not fully formed yet.
Right.
So the roots were open. Also, the skull had, of course, been in water. So that can mess with it, too.
Oh, yeah.
The tiny single-cell microorganisms called diatoms, which we talked about diatoms back in the D.B. Cooper episodes, but they could have altered or damaged the tooth pulp.
God, how many times you just say it?
I'm going to say it 42 times, exactly. I'm just kidding. Probably. Dr. Murray used a surgical drill to extract DNA from the skull, and she carefully removed 6 bone samples from the thickest part of the skull. This was sent for mitochondrial testing. Mitochondrial DNA only comes from your mother. So they would be able to test the DNA from the skull to the DNA of Tina's child, and it was a match.
You were getting so sciencey on me right now.
Yes. Actually, I do have a science episode coming up soon for us.
Okay.
Like, full science. Shortly after Tina's disappearance, her boyfriend Tim rented a storage locker. Police got a search warrant, and they found 19 kitchen knives, small, medium, and large in size. They all had serrated blades. A book on how to kill with your bare hands. A notebook. Yeah, nothing good, right? A notebook on satanic rituals, and his mother said that he had been practicing devil worship, which I have no idea what we're necessarily talking about here, you know what I mean? Because I don't know how in depth he was going.
Right.
But it doesn't sound good. After Tina's disappearance, Tim had been seen on an ATM security camera taking money from her account. The police searched the apartment and did a luminol test. They found blood on the bathroom floor in a crevice between the floor and bathtub and near the toilet. One of the knives from the storage locker did test positive for human protein. After talking with some of Tina's coworkers, investigators learned that Tim occasionally used drugs, and Tina had told people at work that she was afraid of him when he used drugs. Tim was brought back in again for questioning, and he talked about how he was a skilled hunter, and he knows how to skin animals. He grew up on hunting.
Oh my God.
Which is a very strange thing for you to be, like, that's a weird flex, right?
What the hell?
Yeah. You're in talking to the police, and you're like, oh yeah, I know how to skin animals and hunt.
Okay. That's definitely not what I would be saying.
No.
If I was being interviewed or interrogated, I mean, yeah, no, that's
sure would not.
Not what I would go for first.
Probably lowest on the list of things I would be discussing.
Right.
After several hours, he confessed to murdering his girlfriend, and he took the investigators to a nature reserve where he had scattered all of her bones. At this point, it had been 14 months since Tina Mott's murder, so the animals had taken most of the remains. But they were able to recover about half of her body. Every single bone they found had been cut by a hacksaw or a knife. Tim said that on the night of Tina's murder, he had been doing acid. They were playing board games and they got into a fight. Tim said that he hit Tina and her nose started bleeding. So she gets up and runs to the bathroom to take care of her bloody nose. And then Tim started cleaning the apartment. To me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, nope. He hits his girlfriend and then he starts cleaning. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Alrighty then. He says that he was putting his fishing gear away and Tina was angry, you know, because he hit her. And so as she left the bathroom, she lunged for him and he just happened to be holding a fishing knife.
Oh, convenient.
So when she lunged, he accidentally cut her throat.
Right.
After he, okay. I know.
It's like when cheaters are like, oh, well, I accidentally cheated.
My penis accidentally jumped fell into her vagina.
Right.
Yes.
That's exactly what that sounded
like to me.
It
happens all the time. Uh-huh. After he accidentally cut her throat, he just left the apartment. I don't know what he did, but I'll tell you what he did not do.
Call the cops?
Yes. He did not call the cops.
And then what, he accidentally skinned her?
He did not take her to a hospital. He did not help her. He did not hold pressure on that wound. Those are the things he was not doing during this time. When he got back, her body was in the bathtub and she was dead. Tim had no idea how her body got into the bathtub.
Mm.
But now that she was dead, he had to make sure she could never be identified.
Right.
Tim Bradford admitted to using all 19 kitchen knives that were found in the storage shed, and he worked all through the night to dismember her body. He used needle nose pliers to remove all of her teeth, and he used a hacksaw and a meat cleaver. He flushed her organs down the toilet.
Oh my God!
Then he carried the bones out of the apartment in a backpack and trash bag and dumped them in a field. Later, he went to the lake and threw the skull in the water.
Wow.
It's very gruesome.
Wow.
And this is all supposedly from her accidentally falling on his fishing knife.
Right.
And
just tripping and falling on there.
He's able to completely dismember her. And the flush parts of her?
I don't even know. That's disturbing as fuck.
And I have a couple quotes from parts of his confession.
Oh, good.
So, quote, after I cut Tina's head off.
Oh my God, that did not start good. Okay.
I used the meat cleaver and tried to split the head in half before I got the hacksaw out. I used a hacksaw to cut up the body. I flushed some of her down the toilet. The rest I put in garbage bags. After I cut up Tina and put her in garbage bags, I put the bags in a field near the sewage treatment plant. I threw the skull into the lake. I cut the jaw off of it. I know that Tina was dead when I pulled her teeth because when Tina's teeth were pulled, I had already cut off her head.
Oh my God!
I used a pair of pliers to pull her teeth. Nobody helped me do any of it. I did everything myself. I loved Tina.
Oh, that's what I'm feeling.
You cannot do something this fucking disgusting to somebody, to a human being, and then claim that you love her. No.
Right.
I don't even want to hear those words come out of his face. Tim Bradford never provided an explanation for why he murdered Tina Mott, but he was sentenced to 25 years for manslaughter and abuse of a corpse after taking a plea deal. He entered Ohio's state prison system on September 24th, 1997, and he was denied parole at each hearing. He served his entire 25-year sentence and was released on December 6th of 2023.
Megan!
I know. Tina's family feels helpless, and they're very concerned that he's going to harm someone else.
Yeah, fucking yes!
I mean, this was insanely brutal.
Because he will! All it takes is, you know, whatever set him off the first freaking time.
Right, which we have
no
idea.
Somebody to fall into his knife, and he just accidentally slits their whole ass throat.
Mm-hmm. And I'm truly not sure how this happened, but Tina's baby ended up being raised by Tim's parents. Tina's younger sister and her aunt and uncle wrote letters about Tim Bradford's release. The letter says that Tina's son Johnny was raised by Tim's parents, and Tina's family wanted to reach out and connect with him and have him know people on his mother's side of the family. At the time of the letter, he would have been 29 years old. So I hope that Tim's parents were like lovely, lovely people and raised this child well.
Right.
But I'm really confused how
he didn't end up with her family.
Right.
Right.
So that part, because I guess I don't know the legalities of it, but I automatically assume that, you know, if he murdered Tina, then her family should get to raise the child.
Right.
But if it didn't work that way and there was a loving family, you know, where his parents could jump in and take over, that's great. But why would they not have him meeting Tina's family?
I don't get it.
It's a little strange. I don't know what's going on there, but I was kind of shocked to find out about that. Ed Bunz was one of the Hamilton homicide detectives on the scene, and he said, quote, "You know there are always just cases that you will keep in your mind and you'll never forget. We did everything we humanly could for Tina Mott." Ed Bunz believes that they never got the whole truth from Tim. They just got parts of it. One of Tina's neighbors believes that Tim consumed portions of her flesh after cooking it on a grill outside on the balcony. Now, I will tell you, there is absolutely no evidence that's pointing towards this as being the truth. So I do hope not, obviously.
Okay. But
here's where I think he might be coming from, because I was really confused. I was like, okay, this is super stretchy. How did we get here? Tim said he cut Tina's flesh off and flushed it down the toilet. The upstairs apartment where she was murdered had burned in April of 2020, and the fire started on the balcony where the grill was. So it's a super stretch, but it's a theory, you see. Another neighbor said they sometimes see her shadow pass by the windows of her apartment. Tina had been murdered in the upstairs apartment of 622 Minor Avenue in Hamilton, Ohio. She expressed many times that she found it very spooky to be living across the street from the Rupert House. Tim and Tina lived on a street that's infamous for a family massacre.
What the fuck?
And that'll be our next episode.
What the fuck?
I know.
Okay. What the fuck?
So, whoa. I know that one was really brutal, and I promise I do have some much, much lighter material coming up.
Well, you better.
But not next. The next one is, the Rupert one is very bad, too.
Super.
So.
Okay. I have that to look forward to. Thank you.
Yes. You know what we could end on really quick?
What?
A dream of mine.
Oh, boy.
All right. Hannah, do you want to hear about my Hitler dream or aliens?
God, you always make these decisions hard. I'm going to go with Hitler.
Okay.
Because, you know, you did the six... The sixes in this episode, so we gotta.
All right, so in my dream, Adolf Hitler was cloned, and...
Oh, no.
Yeah. He had himself locked in the basement of a large school. He was doing experiments down there, and then he stole two of my cats.
Which two?
Frank and Monster.
Rude.
And he had them locked in the room with him, but I couldn't find the room because there were mazes to get there. So the mazes were everywhere. And I kept waking up, but every time I fell asleep, I was dropping back into a different part of the maze.
Oh, God. I hate when I fall back into the same dream.
Yeah. So a new part of the maze would be there. And I'm like, oh, my God. And at one point, I was outside in the rain, crawling through the mud under chicken wire, trying to get to my cats.
You know what? You do what you gotta do.
Oh my gosh.
There have been some crazy dreams I've had where I'm trying to get to Rona Bear as well. Mm-hmm. And like, wow, the obstacles that I have to go through.
Fucking Hitler took my cats.
That's really rude of him.
I am not happy about this situation.
I did not know where that dream was going, but that is not where I expected.
Never is.
No, that's fair.
Yeah, in a couple episodes we'll have to do the alien dream.
Yeah, please.
All right, so make sure to follow us on any of your podcast apps. Tell us the stories you want to hear. Like us on Facebook, X, Instagram. Leave us a 5-star review if you love us. Tell your friends. Tell your cats. Bye.